Hello, Live Living Family. I'm Catherine Kinley, and I am honored to visit with Dr. Andrew Newberg, Director of Research at the Myrna Brin Center for Integrative Medicine at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital and Medical College. Dr. Newberg is also Adjunct Assistant Professor in the Department of Religious Studies at the University of Pennsylvania, and he is board certified in internal medicine and nuclear medicine. He is considered a pioneer in the neuroscientific study of religious and spiritual experiences, a field frequently referred to as neurotheology. Dr. Newberg, you have found that a personal religious experience many times generates a radical change in perspective, a transformation, if you will, resulting in dramatic changes in a person's perspective on life, death, and relationships. Your attempts to better understand the nature of these religious spiritual experiences is just fascinating to me, and I'm sure the Live Living community as well. I can't wait to read your latest book entitled Principles of Neurotheology, which is a culmination of ideas based upon your research over the past 10 years. It sounds like it will help us better understand the implications of your research for the study of the mind, brain, consciousness, morality, theology, philosophy, or in other words, just bring it all together. Your research has included brain scans of people in prayer and meditation rituals in various trance-like states. In these scans are pictures of the brain during various mental activities. Have you found there to be a spiritual center of the brain, similar to the speech center or vision center, etc., that might be more active during spiritual activities such as prayer, reading scripture, worship, or similar activities?
Well, there doesn't seem to be a specific area of the brain that one might identify as a spiritual center. There's not, at least in the studies that we have done and have been done by other investigators, there isn't one area of the brain that lights up when somebody says, I'm having a religious experience. And in fact, what most of the research that I've been involved with has shown is that because of the richness and diversity of different types of experiences and how people express or understand their religious beliefs, it really looks like many different parts of the brain get involved. In fact, I usually like to say that if there is a spiritual part of ourselves, it's our whole brain, and perhaps even our entire body, because obviously the brain and the body are very intimately connected to each other. And of course, when we talk about the various aspects of religious or spiritual experiences, for some people it is a very emotional experience, and they may feel overwhelmed with love, compassion, awe, perhaps even fear. Each of those can elicit a different kind of change in the brain. For some people, their religious beliefs or experiences are more cognitively based. It's a thought process. It's understanding how God relates to the world or how God relates to them. For other people, it's experiential. It's the feelings that they have when they're in church or they're doing their prayer or what have you. So from my perspective, it looks like so many different parts of the brain get involved, and it really depends a lot on what that particular person is doing, what they're thinking about, feeling about, and experiencing that ultimately is what becomes part of their religious or spiritual beliefs.
Very interesting. Thank you. Have you found that prayer actually affects the brain or changes it, reshapes it in any way?
Oh, absolutely. Some of our studies have been done to look at the immediate effects of a person in prayer or meditation, and we see some very specific changes that occur. Now, again, part of it depends on what the person exactly is doing, but for example, in one of our studies of Franciscan nuns who did a type of prayer called centering prayer, what we found was several specific areas of the brain that were involved in this practice. One of them was the frontal lobe, which is located right behind the forehead. This is an area of the brain that becomes active whenever we concentrate on something, when we focus our attention on something. So when the nuns were concentrating on the prayer, on the phrase from the Bible that was the focus of their practice, they were activating their frontal lobes, and we saw this in the scans, that the frontal lobes actually became more active. They lit up, as we would say. Another part of our brain, which I do think is very important, at least with regard to religious or spiritual experiences, is a part of the brain called the parietal lobe, which is located in the back part of the brain, the back top part of the brain. This is an area that normally takes our sensory information and helps us to create a sense of ourself and to relate that self to the world in a kind of spatial way. What we find with the nuns is that this area of the brain actually decreases in activity. And this is consistent with what we had thought would happen, because when people engage in a deep contemplative practice like centering prayer, they often experience a sense where they lose their sense of self. They lose their sense of space or time. And what we think is happening, at least with regard to the brain, is that the areas that are normally involved in establishing our sense of self and our sense of space wind up shutting down, and in so doing, we wind up experiencing a loss of that sense of self, a loss of the sense of space. And that, so we're starting to see these different correlations between activity in different areas of the brain and the experiences that people are having in the context of their spiritual practice. Now, we've also done some studies that have looked at the longer term effects, and what we are also finding is that not only do practices like prayer or meditation affect a person in the moment, but they actually affect the person over time. And if a person was to start doing a very intense prayer program today, and we scan them again 2 months later or 3 months later, we would see some very significant changes, often in some of the same areas that I just mentioned, the frontal lobes, the parietal lobes, some of the emotional areas of the brain. And these will actually change physically, structurally, as well as functionally over that period of time. And from my perspective, it just simply tells us how powerful these kinds of practices can be in affecting our brain and ultimately in the way in which we think about ourselves and how we relate to the world.
This is just so interesting. Have you found also in the long term, after an intense program of increasing a prayer life, that it makes a person maybe mentally stronger or have a more positive outlook in general?
Some of the work that we've done, as well as others, is starting to show that, is to support that in a more specific way. When people have engaged in different prayer or meditation-based practices, we typically find a reduction in feelings of stress, anxiety, feelings of depression. There's usually a heightened sense of meaning and purpose in life. And so overall, psychologically, people tend to feel much better about things and have a much better mental outlook on things. And of course, again, the mind or brain is very intimately connected to the body. So when we have lower levels of stress and anxiety, our stress system, that normally gets our body revved up, is now quieting down. So our blood pressure, our heart rate, all these things start to calm down, and that allows our immune system to work better. So there are ultimately, we can see the path towards doing these kinds of practices as part of a way of staying healthy, both psychologically as well as physically.
Well, that just reaffirms everything that I have learned as well, is how it's mind, body, spirit. It's all connected, and affecting one is going to necessarily affect the others as well. So that is great to hear that being reaffirmed.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, part of the other aspect of this, which I have been very interested in, although we haven't had an opportunity to do any studies yet, but as a lot of people know, sometimes religious or spiritual beliefs don't go so well. And sometimes people wind up having a very negative view about God or their relationship to God. They may feel that God is punishing them. Maybe they're struggling with their religious beliefs. And of course, this can ultimately have a detrimental effect on people. If you are really struggling with your what to believe, how to believe it, how maybe in a particular experience that you had, like a near-death experience, relates to your religious or spiritual belief system that you've had for many, many years, this can create anxiety and can foster feelings of depression and stress within a person. So it can go both ways, and I think that part of what I would like to see this whole field of research help us with is to better understand when religious and spiritual beliefs and practices do go well and benefit the person versus when they don't go so well and they actually cause problems for an individual, and see if we can use that information to learn how to help people get redirected into a more positive perspective on these things.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That just sounds like the perfect way to apply your science in a very realistic and helpful way. You have performed surveys, as you've mentioned, of people's spiritual experiences and attitudes, and evaluated the relationship between religious and spiritual phenomena and health. And that includes a recent study on the effects of meditation on memory.
Yes.
And with this research in mind, how do you think the meditation or prayer affects memory?
Well, I think in a very global way, the brain is a lot like a muscle, that the more you use it, the more you strengthen it, the more you stretch it, the better it works. So practices like meditation, prayer, that are very actively involving the brain, getting the brain doing a lot of different things, concentrating, focusing, maybe combining that with certain ideas and beliefs and emotions like compassion and love, these are all things that as the brain engages that practice, it literally strengthens the neural connections, it changes the activity in the brain, and therefore allows the brain, hopefully, to be able to function in a more effective way, lowering your levels of stress and anxiety and so forth, as I mentioned. So all of those things come together because these practices help to engage the brain in a lot of activity. And so on a very kind of basic level, that's part of what these practices help us with. Now, of course, part of what I think the research is also suggesting is that people say, well, why don't I just do a concentration task? Why don't I just do crossword puzzles? Well, they're good too. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing them. But when you are engaged in a spiritual practice, something that you have a deep belief in, then the effects typically are that much greater because it is something that you really embrace very fully. It's not just something that you're kind of doing because you have to do. You're doing it because you really want to do it, you like it, it makes you feel better, and all of those things come together to make those kinds of practices, I think, a little bit better in terms of enriching your overall mental and psychological health.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's always good to do lots of different things, and the more, in fact, part of what we've talked about is one of the most important things for our brain is social interactions. So if you belong to a church or some other group of people who are friends with you, the more you can engage with them, talk to them, and not just talk about kind of, little stuff, but talk about ideas, talk about, what do they think about religious beliefs, political beliefs, what do they think about the world, and challenge yourself and challenge them, because the more we challenge the brain, the more we exercise the brain, the better it ultimately works.
Well, this reminds me of something that my pastor is fond of saying, that Christianity is a team sport, that
yeah.
We aren't intended to do it individually, and it's a team sport. So how do you think your research is relevant to Christians in particular, since the Live Living community is a Christian community? How do you think your research is relevant to Christians?
Well, on many levels, I think, as we were just talking, on a very practical level, the more people can engage their own beliefs, their Christian beliefs within the church, the more they can interact with the people around them, the more they can engage practices like meditation and prayer as part of their religious tradition, all of those things will help to enhance their overall physical and mental health. And of course, they also need to be somewhat aware of whenever things may not be going well, when they may think, I'm struggling with my religious beliefs, and talk to people, talk to somebody that you trust, talk to a family member to find a way of working towards a more positive perspective on that or resolving whatever conflicts may arise within you. The other aspect of all of this, I think, is teaching us about the nature of practices like prayer, like centering prayer or other Christian practices, where we can understand even more so not only what they mean spiritually or religiously for an individual, but what they ultimately are doing for them physiologically, how they're affecting their brain, how their brain is a part of this overall process. Because I think clearly that is, it's our brain that reads the Bible, it's our brain that helps us recite the prayers, that helps us to stand up, sit down, look at certain images like the cross. So all of these are part of the ways in which our brain helps us to be religious or spiritual, and I think this kind of research helps us to better understand that overall relationship. And as you mentioned, I think even on a more philosophical or theological level, this idea of a concept called neurotheology, the notion that we can try to understand how the brain works as a way of helping us to address certain theological questions about the nature of reality, the nature of humanity, the nature of free will. It's a part of the conversation. It doesn't get rid of the traditional theological perspectives by any stretch, but it adds something to it. It tells us something about You know, if we can understand how our brain makes decisions, maybe that'll tell us something about the nature of human free will as part of the overall process. So I think that there's some really fascinating philosophical and theological questions within Christian theology that that this kind of work can ultimately be extremely useful for in providing a new perspective, a new voice in the overall dialogue.
I think it's just exciting to hear that this research, one, is being done, and that you are as fascinated and interested in it as some of us, and realizing that there is some very substantial evidence of the effects of prayer and those types of activities on our physical being. And I'm just so excited to learn more about it. I have realized that you have published over 150 research articles, essays, book chapters. You're the co-author of the best-selling books, Why God Won't Go Away, Brain Science and the Biology of Belief, as well as the book, How God Changes Your Brain, Breakthrough Findings from a Leading Neuroscientist.
Yes, thank
Dr.
you.
Neuberg, and you've also published, again, your latest book is called The Principles of Neurotheology, also Why We Believe What We Believe and the Mystical Mind. You've presented your research throughout the world in both scientific and public forums. You've appeared on Nightline 2020, Good Morning America, ABC World News Tonight, various radio programs, including National Public Radio, London Talk Radio. And your work has been featured in Time, Newsweek, Los Angeles Times, The Washington Post, and now Live Living International E Magazine, which we're just thrilled about.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, we have put a link to Dr. Neuberg's website along with this interview on our website, and you can find a more complete overview of his work at his website. And as I said, I will be ordering my copy of your latest book, Principles of Neurotheology, as soon as I get off the phone here. And so I want to thank you once again for sharing your knowledge and this exciting research with the Live Living community.
Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing feedback and continuing the discussion with everyone.
Well, I can't wait to learn more. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And have a wonderful day.
You too.
Good day.